Thank you, and I echo Rosalie's comment on it being a great privilege to talk to you. I think that I'd like to start with a couple of questions. Do we have anybody here between the ages of 18 and 29? Welcome. I didn't expect that, but I'll be checking in with you afterwards. Anybody who is parents of 18 to 29? Wish they were 18 to 29? You certainly will when you're done, because I tell you, I wish I was 18 to 29. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about the youth market, Generation Y as we know them as, and I think really the key question for these next generation users of the Next Generation Network that I would ask you all is, if you are building the Next Generation Network, who are you building it for? Because it isn't probably the people who are in the room today. The Next Generation Network will really serve the needs of Generation Y and the generations beyond that, and I think that that's something that really needs to be kept very central in any types of discussions about where this is going. So the media consumption of Generation Y. Just a little bit of background as to the contents of this presentation. Fairfax Digital in Australia saw a gap in the market and in our portfolio in terms of engaging with the youth market. And what we wanted to do was expand our demographic reach. Clearly we're a publisher. The history, the 176-year history of Fairfax is really in print. And I think, as we all know, youth today simply very rarely pick up a newspaper. Some of them do, but most of them have migrated their lives online. So we really saw a gap in our portfolio to engage with those. So one of the things that we did, as is our practice, is we engaged in a very extensive research phase around the market and whether or not there was an opportunity there. I've just seen Ross, old colleague from Microsoft. And whether or not there was an opportunity there to actually make some investments. And of course, one of the things that we found was that the Fairfax brand meant very little to this demographic. And in fact, they're very anti any corporation or any big brand. So the first thing that we needed to do was to partner with an agency or a company that were specialists in this area. And we selected a company called Life Lounge. Life Lounge is a youth marketing company in Australia. They have a very big piece of the market in terms of understanding youth. So in April of 2008, we formed a joint venture with Life Lounge and launched a product, a digital product, into this market called thevine.com.au. Now, what I'm not going to talk to you about is thevine.com.au. I think you can go sneak in to the website, have a surreptitious look around, and see really how that's going. I'll talk a little bit about where we're at with that today, but what I wanted to talk to you about was this research phase. The key asset that Life Lounge brought to the partnership was a very extensive research portfolio and product called the Universal Marketing Research Product, where they had been surveying Generation Y, this target market, for the last 5 years. And it was that depth of understanding around this market that were the key to building this, as it turns out, very successful product. So let's have a little look at the snapshot of the market. The market is 18 to 29-year-olds, and well, up until very recently, they've grown up in a period of very much unparalleled prosperity. You know, I was talking with Malcolm before about in the workplace today, we're seeing the Generation Y, particularly in the sales force in Fairfax, really like rabbits staring into the headlights of a car as we hit an economic bump, if I could put it that way. They haven't come across these hard times before. In Australia, that's about 4 million people, and they have at their fingertips about $48 billion that they can spend on hedonistic pursuits per year. I was absolutely stunned at that money, but let me tell you, it's the boomers that are subsidising this lifestyle. So for those of you who are parents of the 18 to 29-year-olds, that's primarily their source of income. They are getting subsidised by the generation before. They're very, very much focused on the good life. This is a generation that is unprecedented. They have very different values, very different habits, and very, very different behaviours. And a lot of that is really being fueled by innovations in technology. But it's a very, very different fish to understand. They focus on the good life. In this universal market research, one of the things that provided great insight to us about this generation were the defining pillars of the lifestyle. And throughout this research, we found that these defining statements are how this generation define themselves. the music I like. Now, that's not really different from generation to generation. Have a little flip back through your own memory banks at, you know, the Beatles or Madonna or whoever the musical groups were that defined your generation. That's not really new, but I think it's probably more important and more significant than ever before. The clothes I wear, the films I enjoy, the travel I have done. For males, they also said sport, and for women, it was around my academic achievements and what I read. So these are the things about each individual in the age group that make up who they are, their identity. What's driving this consumption, this $48 billion that they've got to pour into the economy, is that 53% of them are still living at home. They're simply not moving out. And while they're living at home, they're enjoying the largesse of the boomer generation, who are typically, you were in that age group, are you still living at home? Oh, I won't ask any more questions. Typically, you know, it's not board, it's not rent, they're not being asked to make a contribution, they're simply living at home. And yet a lot of them are working, a lot of them full-time, a lot of them part-time, and the average worker earns around $50,000 per year. And that is all disposable income, or mostly disposable income. What they're using that income for, though, is a little bit different than previous generations. They're using it to further define who they are. Think back to the defining pillars on the previous slide. That's where they're spending that money. There's also a great trend towards cocooning, people staying at home. I think Stefan talked about gaming and opportunities for new revenue streams in gaming, particularly in women. They're staying at home. They're getting on the internet. They're bringing others into their home, and they're sharing these interests with each other. So we're seeing that trend towards inward behaviour rather than outward, going out to pubs and clubs. Speaking of trends, it's the end of trends. And I was sitting there before thinking about some trends that, I guess, of me growing up, and to illustrate how quickly they're moving on. You know, Barbie, the 50-year fad, she's still going on. Tamagotchi, remember that? Came, stayed for a while, went, stayed for what, 6-9 months? People were interested in that? Marbles, games of marbles, trading cards in the playground, and even things like the mullet haircut. You know, that was around, arguably still around, but that sort of trend was around for a very, very long time, scanning the room looking for a mullet. Trends are gone. What we're seeing is that things that are here today are absolutely gone tomorrow. As soon as somebody else has gotten onto it, they've moved on. There is still a group that are clumping together around, particularly around, again, music and that type of interest, but they're constantly looking ahead. This demographic is constantly looking ahead at what is coming rather than what's been. So this whole trends thing, the whole era of trends has really finished. Technology is very, very much an essential to this generation. Technology has reached a can't live without it status. People would rather give up eating than their mobile phone. That's just an absolutely frightening thing, but that's what they're telling us. They just cannot live without their mobile. They cannot live without being connected using technology to each other. They seek it out, they totally embrace it. I think about my two-year-old, two toys. She's got a mobile phone, Barbie on it, admittedly, that trend that just won't die, and also a camera, a toy camera, digital camera. When I take a picture of her, she expects to see it straight away. She's never seen, or she's never experienced waiting for anything in her short two-year life. Show me, show me, show me, as soon as the photo comes out. And then she says, nah, delete. Don't know where she gets that one from. So they seek it out, they totally embrace it. It's very much a defining characteristic of their identities. In that world of technology, they're able to find people like me. And people like me will probably be 5 or 6 people who are like a little bit of me. And they'll all come together and clump and form a community around those, around the interests that they share. Obviously, technology now dominates media habits. An interesting one, they spend more time on the internet than they do watching television. And we will see that number and that gap grow year on year on year. They are choosing where and when they want to receive information. Sometimes it's on the TV, but increasingly it's not in that domain. We're seeing a great fragmentation of media as a result of this generation. spending more time on mobile. I think thinking, you know, around next generation and networks need to go very much in parallel with thinking about mobile and thinking about how you're going to extend into mobile. Very high degree of multitasking. They can watch TV, they can be on the internet and sending an SMS at the same time, usually talking about something completely different, one of their interests again. So very much an essential in their lifestyle, which is a good thing. Other key things that we're seeing, and this kind of goes a little bit to the conversation around IPTV and peer-to-peer, they expect content to be free, but they're happy to pay to satisfy immediate gratification. And for that, that means ads. So it's not always a cash transaction. They're very happy to be served ads while they're looking at free content. And that's something to really think about. If you make it easy enough and available, and you build a revenue stream out of serving ads on it, we're seeing that that is becoming a more successful model, as long as it's not too intrusive in terms of the format that you use. They always need to be connected. iPods are very much displacing radio, and the internet and the iPod is introducing new ways to market, new points of distribution for things like music, for fashion trends, again, back to those defining pillars of who everybody is. This growing adoption of broadband is really propelling the importance and the usage of online, but more importantly, it's really accelerating globalisation. So it doesn't matter where these kids are in the world, they're finding like-minded people in any country in the world. And that's, again, a very much helping them to define who they are, this cross-cultural mix of interests and likes being shared. Obviously, they like to be entertained, and they like to share humour and interests with their friends. So there's some other things that are coming out very, very strongly in the research. What are the implications for us from a publisher perspective or for anybody who's in brands or trying to sell to this domestic CIO in the home, the youth market? It's actually getting harder and harder to reach them. It's very much being diluted. You used to be able to get to this market through TV, then you could get to this market through universities, you could get to this market even on the radio. What you need to do now is understand very clearly what the mix is in terms of how you reach youth today. And quite frankly, they're not responding to traditional marketing. And even traditional marketing is even an email. We're seeing the responses drop more and more and more off in terms of getting to them electronically. So, you know, email is often thought of as being up to the moment, and it's just yesterday's trend for this particular market. User-generated content is considered more credible than mass markets. They will believe something is true if one of their like-minded friends tell them before they believe it on the TV news, the printed news, or the online news. So it's very much this opinion community that's moving around in this market that has more credibility than any of the traditional ways of getting information, and that's really an interesting one. It's a very interesting one for us as a publisher of news, as one of our core businesses. They're likely to have a digital home in many places. They have an identity that's in MySpace, in Facebook, in Twitter, in Bebo, in Friendster, in many, many places around. And we're seeing very successful markets coming through now of aggregators of those profiles and being able to understand those. What it means for us is that you need to have a presence for your brand in each of those places as well. You need to have a Facebook app, you need to have a Twitter account, you need to be active on dig sites. So you've got to reach out to where those digital homes are rather than waiting for them to come to you. And it's that aggregation that's really significant there. They carry their social address book in their pocket. It's called their mobile phone and they can't live without it. If you can get onto that mobile phone, you become a trusted friend of theirs, and that's going to be almost the golden point of real estate for anybody who's trying to get to this market in the future. So we looked at all of those trends and, you know, understood that we wanted to grow into this demographic, so the Fairfax response was creating the Vine. We worked with this company to do that, and we launched the Vine in April of 2008. The product is very much built around the key pillars. We translated those as being entertainment, fashion, music, news, technology, the Vine TV, video is becoming more important, but also community. And it's that community aspect of the Vine that makes it a very different proposition from the traditional Fairfax media properties. That community is really very much a user-generated community of blogging and comments and favourites and all of those things that they like to share with each other. And it essentially allows them to communicate their vision to the world. We call it, you know, we've moved on from 15 seconds of fame to 15 megabytes of fame. We reverse publish that in the newspapers. When we reverse publish them, we see a spike. So they will buy the paper if they can see themselves in it. So that's kind of an interesting, and they'll buy one for their mum. So it's kind of an interesting thing that we're seeing. But that citizen journalism through blogging is a very, very significant piece of this market. And obviously, if you're going to do anything in the youth market, it has to be available online, print, mobile, anywhere they want to be. That's where the product has to be. So how's the Vine going? Well, it's been going since April of 2008. So far, it's exceeded all targets. You can see the numbers there. We've taken a number one spot in the category after 10 months, which is very significant for us. One of the ways that we've done this is by building an editorial team who are very, very clearly in that target market. The product changes every 40 minutes online because the end of trends is dead. And there's that element too of having the community decide what's relevant and what's important as alongside of the editorial team. So it has been very much a success story for Fairfax, and clearly we've been able to monetize that through being able to get to this very significant target audiences for advertisers. So that's the story of the Vine. That's the story of where youth is today. And again, you know, I'll leave you with my key question in terms of building the next generation network. I think it's worth taking a lot more time to understand who you're building it for. Thank you.